The next case for oral argument is in the matter of the estate of Walter Brownlee for the appellant. Jeannie Weekly is Mr. Gregory Stoltenberg, attorney from Clear Lake, and for the appellee is Mr. John Foley, attorney from Watertown. And Mr. Stoltenberg, you may proceed. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court. Walter Brownlee died August 17, 1997. In his will, he devised certificates of deposit to Jeannie Weekly in excess of $580,000. The personal representative of the estate collected these CDs and collected a $25,000 personal payment from her within 9 months of the date of death and deposited that into the estate attorney's trust account. The personal representative has used these CDs and $25,000 to pay not only Jeannie Weekly's share of the federal estate tax and inheritance tax, but also 100% of the residual heirs federal estate tax, 100% of the estate's income tax, 100% of all other debts of the estate, 100% of the cost of administration of the estate, including personal representative fees and attorney fees. The key fact there is Jeannie Weekly is not the devisee legally obligated to pay any of those items.
Before you go beyond the facts, you got to tell me, I can't get the math to come out on this. $580,000 in CDs. $171,000 supposedly in equipment, and it doesn't seem to me, it seems to me there should be enough money, and somehow there isn't. And
right.
Second question is, there's some suggestion in the record that these CDs are in joint tenancy, and if so, how did they get in the estate?
No, to answer your second part of your question, Justice Zinter, these particular CDs were owned by Walter L. Brownlee Sr. If you look at the inheritance tax report, Schedule A, there's a listing of CDs that were owned by Walter Brownlee Sr. in his name alone.
So there's some of each?
Schedule B had a number of accounts that were owned jointly between Jeannie Weekly and Walter Brownlee. I'm talking about only the CDs that were in Walter Brownlee's name.
So the 580 is?
Is those CDs.
Is some of did 580 include some of the joint tenancy CDs? When you use that figure?
No, it does not. And where a lot of that money went, Jeannie Weekly was unrelated, as far as legally, to Walter Brownlee Sr. The share of her inheritance tax was $239,000, okay? Plus, she paid a significant amount in federal estate tax, and that was over $200,000. So when you add those together, and I don't have the exact specific dollar amounts, but the federal estate tax and South Dakota inheritance tax ate up a good portion of that. What she is entitled to after everything is said and done is $157,535.14. Okay? That includes a $25,000 personal payment that she made to the estate at their request. So not only did she give them the $580,000 worth of CDs and the personal representative took possession of those, the personal representative requested and Jeannie complied and paid $25,000 to the estate. So they ended up with over $600,000 of assets from her. The estate has paid her of that $157,000. They've paid her $75,000 as a partial distribution. So she's still entitled to $82,535.14. That's the amount that we are asking that interest be awarded. Okay? Now, if the court will recall back in Brownlee 1, the first decision that this court issued on this court, there were really two issues in front of the court. The first issue was the proper allocation of federal estate tax and South Dakota inheritance tax as it related to the devisees under the will and a revocable trust that Walter Brownlee had set up. And that was decided by this court back in November 2002. The second issue in Brownlee 1 was whether the construction equipment, that there was a bill of sale done by the decedent prior to his death, whether that was an effective gift. Okay? This court held that that was an ineffective gift and that $171,000 worth of construction equipment was brought back into the residue of the probate estate. The court then determined that of that $171,000 of construction equipment, that was the fund, the residue of the estate, that was the fund that was to be used to pay the debts and costs of administration of the estate. That hasn't been done.
Why did she give the estate or the personal representative $25,000 then?
She was requested to at the time. She was unrepresented at that time, I might add. She was requested by the estate, and the estate had made an initial determination that they were going to be short funds and that they needed additional funds from her out of the joint accounts that she had gotten after Walter died. And they said, we're going to need extra money. How much do you need? $25,000. She wrote a personal check for that amount to the estate.
What percentage of interest are you claiming on the $82,582, and from what date?
10%. 1 year after the date of, 1 year after the appointment of the personal representative. And that relates to Justice Sabers. (29A)(3-904). And that states that general pecuniary devises bear interest at category B rate as specified in 54.316, that's the 10%, beginning 1 year after the first appointment of a personal representative until payment, unless a contrary intent is indicated in the will. And there is no contrary intent indicated in the will.
What reasons have the estate given, if it's in the record, as to non-payment?
The reasons in the record would be that they do not have the they don't have any more funds in the estate to pay her.
Pretty good reason.
Not from Jeannie Weekly's perspective, because I'm not sure why her assets become the bank of the estate. Okay.
Has the estate taken any action against the person in possession of the $171,000 worth of equipment?
Over 1 year after this court issued Brownlee 1, the estate brought an action against Randy Brownlee and Jeannie Weekly, and that's the underlying case of this appeal, to recover the property or its value, and is seeking rental on its use. To date, that we're stuck in that right now because Jeannie Weekly, as part of that lawsuit, counterclaimed for attorney fees for the benefit to the estate, and she counterclaimed for interest due on her delayed devise. Okay? And we're trying to get those issues resolved. So what happens effectively is Randy Brownlee, the decedent's son, we get a ruling and a decision as to the exact amount. The estate is hoping that he will then write a check out to the estate for that amount so they can reimburse Jeannie Weekly.
Well, in bringing the cross-claim, didn't you kind of put the cart in front of the horse?
Well, and my answer to that would be, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be driving the cart. The estate is.
No, but you are now, aren't you?
Well, I am now because of the decisions that were made at the lower court and how the lower court erred. But bottom line is, Jeannie Weekly hasn't got her money. Bottom line is, it's been 8 years since the guy died. She still hasn't got her money. She's entitled to interest on that delayed devise.
On a theoretical level, why would the legislature allow or require interest on a general device but not a specific device? I don't, to me, that doesn't, I thought about that a little bit and I can't quite.
Well, and that's one of my points when I make in my brief, Justice Zinter, is I'm not sure we're talking about the terms of art, general device versus specific device. I think the key words in that statute are pecuniary.
Well, they're both, because they both have to have meaning.
Right, right. And a general device is one that is a device in a will, okay? When you look at the overall pervasive scheme of the code, and you look at 29A3-703 and 704 and 29A3-101, they all deal with the property devolves to the person that receives it under the will, real and personal property, at the time of the decedent's death. The duties are defined in 703 and 704 that a PR has to expeditiously and efficiently collect and distribute the assets of the estate. When you look at all of that, along with, then look at the abatement statute dealing with that a specific devisee is treated more favorably than a general devisee under the abatement statute. When you look at all of that and then go back to the interest statute under the UPC 904, when you look at the whole scheme, it's clear to me that the legislature is saying that they have to give a delayed devisee, when a devise is delayed, there has to be interest. There has to be something that forces a personal representative to comply with those duties under 703 and 704. And even if you get outside of the UPC, then you're under the general interest statute, 21.1.13.1, and that applies. So there's lots of different routes to take, but when you look at it,
I still don't understand why it doesn't make sense that a general devisee would get interest, but a specific would not.
Well, and I'm saying even if it's specific, the specific devisee still gets interest, but it's underneath 21.1.13.1, the general interest statute, or you can read 29A3-904 to say that it includes all devisees under the will. Because when you look at the Holen case, which you guys issued, or this court issued back in 2004, that particular case,
Holen had a provision in the will, though, that required interest. So it's a different, it's a totally different thing.
Well, and I don't think it is different because the rationale is still the same. And I believe it was Justice Konenkamp wrote that decision, and he adopts, this court adopts the majority view that the delay in settlement will not delay accrual of interest because such a rule more closely honors testamentary intent in that it bases the accrual of interest on an initial point that cannot be moved by the fortuities in the probate process, thus allowing testators to provide certainty in their requests. And one thing I think is pretty important in that case that's stated is that we must examine this question not simply from the estate's perspective, but from the beneficiary or the devisee's perspective. Okay, and I know Justice Sabers asked me a question of about the estate and what they should have done or what they've done to this point. I think the issue is, what has the estate done? Because from Jeannie Weekly's perspective, she hasn't been paid. And they've had her money for 8 years.
But as Justice Sabers says, did they really have her money? I mean, until they get this equipment or its value, do they have the money to even pay it?
They could have. They could have requested that back in 1997, 98. They breached their duty in not obtaining that property or its equivalent value. They took the easy route, okay? We've got assets that are difficult to possess and collect, $171,000 of a construction equipment, and we have some CDs that we can go down to a bank and just pick up and put into a trust account. They chose the easy method of getting these CDs and putting them in there, and they've used Genie Weekly as the bank for the estate for the past 8 years. And even though this court issued a decision in 2002 saying the residual beneficiaries have to pay the debts and costs of administration of the estate, and everyone has to pay their proportionate share of federal estate taxes, Jeannie Weekly has still been the bank that's been holding all that, even though she is not the one that's legally obligated to pay any of those items. And one thing I want to mention in Poland that it also states is the right to receive interest is incident to the legacy itself. Okay? Those receiving a money legacy are in a similar position to creditors and are therefore entitled to interest from the time they would have received payment absent the delay from a will contest. This rationale accords with testamentary intention. Wills are ordinarily made with the expectation that distribution will not be postponed. When delays occur from a will contest, they may lessen the value of the bequest. Jeannie Weekly has not received one penny from the probate estate on what has been determined to be $157,000 worth of property, and she hasn't received any of that yet today. And importantly, that includes a $25,000 personal payment that the estate was never entitled to and has never reimbursed her for. I do want to talk real briefly on the attorney fee issue that's submitted and the motion to reopen that Jeannie Weekly filed. Jeannie Weekly filed that counterclaim against the estate for interest and attorney fees. Briefings and oral argument were presented to the lower court and was submitted to the court. In the interim, this court issued two decisions, Seabrass 3 and In Re Estate of Holland. Okay, Seabrass 3 dealt with attorney fees, Holland dealt with interest, and that's what I've been quoting on. But on Seabrass 3, this court specifically addressed the issue of whether a devisee is in, under a will, a beneficiary is entitled to attorney fees if they benefit the estate. Seabrass 3 adopts a two-pronged test pursuant to a 1989 case, Hafferman. And so the two-pronged test, first prong is, did the services that Weekly's attorneys conducted on her behalf benefit the estate? The second prong is, were the services necessary because of the negligence, fraud, or failure to defend or prosecute in interest of the estate by the personal representative? Okay.
As I read the record, though, the trial court never denied your request based on the second prong. At no point in this case has the trial court ever said, I'm denying fees because you failed to satisfy prong two.
It did deny it based on a portion of it. It denied it on the fact that Weekly pursuing the tax issues under Bronner 1, that those particular issues did not benefit the estate.
That's prong
and were not prosecuted by the estate.
That's prong one.
But we had to present additional evidence that showed exactly how the estate handled that issue and failed to prosecute it. And what I think is important, Justice Zinter, is that the estate didn't just sit on its hands. It took an active role in taking positions contrary to the financial best interests of the estate. And that, if you would, tainted the entire process. If you go back to February 2001 was the main hearing on the taxation issues and the gift issues under Brown.
Your time has expired, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Foley, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is John Foley. I'm the attorney for the estate of Walter Brownlee and the personal representative for Robert Wagner's present. This matter has been before the Supreme Court and also and mentioned by the appellant that it has been a delayed situation and the estate has attempted to work to get the construction equipment. First of all, I'd like to mention this construction equipment is heavy road equipment, large caterpillars and cranes and front-end loaders. And so it is difficult at beginning of the trial of the, or excuse me, of the estate that the person in possession was Randy Brownlee, the son who was supposed to receive the equipment by the bill of sale. Of course, the court found, the lower court found that it was not a valid gifting because the bill of sale was not delivered. And therefore, at that time, that was appealed to the Supreme Court, and Randy Brownlee was represented by an attorney, and we were in negotiations. The Supreme Court reaffirmed the lower court and said it was not a valid gift, and we proceeded to attempt to get that equipment and proceed, but we continue to run into delays in court proceedings. During the term of the estate, the original personal representative appointed by the will, Mr. Prostrello from Madison, became very ill, and so he asked to resign when the case was still pending in the Supreme Court. At that time, Mr. Wagner accepted to be appointed. He's an attorney in the state of South Dakota, and both parties objected to his appointment. So again, we were in the court proceedings delaying it. Mr. Austin, representing Mr. Brownlee in the estate, were in negotiations, and Mr. Austin, in reference to the machinery, Mr. Austin withdrew as the attorney for Mr. Brownlee, and the circuit court allowed the withdrawal. And Mr. Brownlee wasn't represented, and we were attempting to get someone to represent him so we could move forward on the machinery issue. And so at the time Mr. Wagner appointed, the matter of the Supreme Court issue was settled, and the court issued its opinion in November of 2002. And the trust, who was also a party to the original action, the trustee filed asked for a rehearing, so the court denied the rehearing in December of 2002. And in January of 2003, the newly appointed personal representative, Mr. Wagner, petitioned the court to pay the $75,000 to Jeannie Wheatley that was funds available in the account. And the reason for petitioning the court for authorization, which seems strange, is there was so much animosity between the parties, the estate wanted to make sure that it was of record that it was being done. And after that hearing, Mr. Austin resigned, and so we petitioned in September of 2003. It was approximately a year after the Supreme Court had the ruling in reference to the machinery, and we felt at that time, because Mr. Brownlee up until that time felt that he had ownership of the machinery by the bill of sale. And we started to authorize to recover the machinery with a lawsuit. Some of the complaint were filed, and a hearing was held before the circuit court in February 2004. And at that time, Mr. Brownlee was represented by attorney Thomas Part, excuse me, his son, who, after that hearing, went to Iraq, so Mr. Thomas Party took over the case. And again, they, the attorney for Mr. Brownlee and the appellant, we had asked for a hearing to get possession machinery. They asked the court to have the issues of the interest and the attorney fees brought before the court, and so we were back into that area. The machinery issue of getting possession of the machinery issue was set aside again. And after that hearing, then we are in this process of having the appeal to the court. It had been very difficult for the estate to get control of the machinery. The parties have had issues. We do question the attorney fees that were issued and requested earlier by the appellant, is because any of the issues in the Supreme Court that they appealed really had no effect on the estate. It was only to shift the burden of the tax liability from the estate to the trust. And
why didn't the estate, what's the date of the trial court ruling saying the equipment belongs to the estate, not to the son? What's the date of it?
The date of that?
2001 sometime?
2001, yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Issued opinion on June 22nd.
2001. All right. Did the estate require the son to post a supersedious bond?
We did not.
Okay. So you just let him have the equipment, let him use the equipment without any payment of interest or without any payment of rent?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that's going on now till 2005?
That is right, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, all of what you've said, to me, it just appears to be, you know, an excuse. Now, whether it's a valid excuse or not, it's just an excuse. But it doesn't seem to eliminate, and you don't seem to be claiming, that eliminates your legal obligations of the estate.
Our action that we brought in September of 2004 was to get possession and or rent for the equipment.
Yes, but would you answer the question, though? I mean, it seems like everything you've said was just simply for the purposes of an excuse, and it doesn't seem to go against your obligation to your duties under the law to to pay the money.
I don't know if it's an excuse, but I think it was our duty, the estate, to get it, but it became a conflict of trying to which way to get the equipment, because if we had no assets to store this equipment, it would have taken a possession of this equipment, and to keep it secure, we would have had an expense there.
You could have taken it and sold it.
I guess that could be a...
Okay.
So is that what you're waiting for? You're waiting for the equipment to get the money to make the payments? Is that,
yes, yes.
Is that the bottom line here?
That's correct. Well,
what about the merits of this thing? Why don't you want to pay interest?
Well, we don't feel that we have to pay interest, because actually some of this delay we feel has been by the parties involved in this, and we feel that there's a specific bequest, and therefore the statutes don't require that we have to pay it.
As far as the specific bequest, the CDs evidently, though, at some point were cashed in or changed into cash. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that if it's a specific, I guess I'm having trouble understanding that. If it's a specific device devised, one would get the CD transferred along with the interest that CD would normally accrue as the time proceeded. What the state has done, however, has almost changed the complexion of what that device is by cashing it into cash. If it's a specific, then she would have gotten it, and the interest would have gotten whatever interest was normally accruing on that CD. Now, because the estate's cashed it, does it change the complexion of it? It no longer is a specific device, because those CDs no longer exist, is my understanding.
That's correct. They were cashed.
So does that change the analysis of this?
Well, we feel that it was, we mentioned in the will certificates, no matter how they were cashed, it was a specific gift, and therefore there's no interest to be charged. So actually, with the matter of the machinery is that we attempted to, and therefore the matter came up before the court, and once the court decides this, the estate is going to move forward to the petition to get the equipment and sell it, at that time pay Jeannie Wheatley. We feel that if the value of the machinery isn't there, Mr. Brownlee would have to pay the rental factor or use factor of the machinery. So we feel that in the cases, with reference to the attorney fees, the lower court awarded and found that the appellant was entitled to the attorney fees of $18,000 of attorney fees and sales tax and costs, which we had no objection to, and this was a reduction from what the appellant requested, attorney fees of a large sum in reference to appealing some of the matters in the first Brownlee case, and which did not benefit anybody other than, and the court found that these were facts that weren't supported by the action. So,
completed your presentation?
That's
okay. No one's chastised for quitting early. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Stoltenberg, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chief.
Before you start, I want to make sure I understand this. The trial court sent you back to revise your attorney fee claim.
Yes.
And limit it solely to the issue of the equipment recovery.
Yes.
And as I understand the record, you got everything you claimed with respect to that, that related to the recovery of that equipment. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. If I understood Mr. Foley's argument, whatever property is easy to collect, the estate will collect, and if it's hard to collect, then it's okay to leave it with somebody else. Okay? That's essentially where we're at today. These CDs, Jeannie Wheatley CDs, were easy to collect and put in their bank account. The construction equipment was not. Therefore, we only have to use this money here because it's easier. That's not the law. The law is that they are to collect the assets of the estate and distribute to the proper distributees. That's not been done, and that's really what we're talking about today.
How did they get, her name was on some of those CDs, how'd they get her to sign off on them?
She jumped in a car with the personal representative and they drove her around to the banks.
This was prior to representation?
Prior to representation, yes.
Thank you.
Now, if you look at Defendant's Exhibit 14, it's in the settled record. There's a letter from Mr. Foley to Mr. Austin, Randy Brownlee's attorney at that time. It's dated September of 2001. And just to read a portion of this letter, this is from Mr. Foley. Because the court ruled that the bill of sale did not constitute a gift, the estate has ownership of the equipment and wants to explore the possibility of Randy purchasing the equipment and the possibility of rent doing owing. This matter needs to be addressed at this time. That was in 2001. 4 years later, it still has not been addressed, except as to the lawsuit filed in January of 2003,
you know,
or 2004.
What difference does all this delay make? The only question we have is, how do you interpret the statute, whether you qualify for interest under the statute? Isn't that really the issue in this case?
It is, but it also goes to the duty of the personal representative to do their job, because Justice Zinter, what incentive does a personal representative have to ever distribute assets efficiently and expeditiously under the statute if there's no club over them telling them they have to do it.
Well, the club is there. It's the statute.
The interest.
Yeah.
Money. Yeah. There's your club. And so I think they're intertwined because you have to have a duty and an obligation before you get to the interest. And I just wrote this down this morning, but this is likened to a debtor telling one of his creditors, I can't pay you back your money because I used the money to pay other creditors. The unpaid creditor requests interest on the delayed payment, and the circuit court says, no, because you weren't ever damaged. Well, a delay in the payment of money that you are legally entitled to is damages. And that's one of the things that the lower court determined is Jeannie Weekly's never been damaged. The lower court erred in that regard. How can she not be damaged by a delay in the payment of money that she's legally entitled to?
There's some cases, and I don't have them on the tip of my tongue. I don't even know that I have them on the tip of my mind, but there's some cases that relate to when somebody becomes a volunteer in the law, that then that creates, you know, no obligation. Are there, do you run across any cases like that here that said, you know, Jenny Weekly was a volunteer of permitting these CDs to be used, and therefore she's got no claim?
To answer your specific question, no, I've not ran across any cases like that.
Okay.
That's not on the tip of my head either. But I will say she has never voluntarily said, you can continue to use this money to pay all the bills and debts and costs of administration of the estate. Somebody else is legally obligated to do so, and we've asked that since our petition back in, I believe it was December of 2000, that the court make a determination, the lower court make a determination that the proper persons to pay these debts and costs of administration is the residual beneficiaries, Randy Brownlee and his siblings. We've asked that for years, and that's why we're here today, is it's never been done. And that's especially true as it relates to that $25,000 of her personal payment that she gave back in April 1998. And I just want to be clear on this. Not only is the payment, is there a delayed payment on her devise, but everyone and every bill, debt, and cost of this estate has been paid out of her devise. That's the reason the estate does not have sufficient funds to pay her right now, is they've used all of her legally entitled money, CDs and $25,000 of personal payment, to pay all these things. And what's been her reward on this thing for fighting for the estate? She fought in Brownlee 1 to try to get this trust to pay these taxes. That would have benefited the probate estate by up to $500,000. The estate's position was against that. She was trying to benefit the estate. She worked a lot on that, okay? Her attorneys on her behalf. She worked on the estate's behalf to get $171,000 of construction equipment back into the estate. The estate attorney writes a brief saying this was an effective gift, fought against Jeannie Weekly. So Jeannie Weekly is standing here, and she should be assisting, allowing the estate and the personal representative to fight these battles, but instead she's had to pick up the flag and do it all herself. And not only is she carrying this flag, she's getting fired at by the persons that should be helping her.
Well, how did it actually benefit the estate on the tax issue? Because the children, as I recall, were beneficiaries in both, under both the estate and the trust, so either way, they were going to end up paying the taxes.
The estate, Walter L. Bromley Estate, is a separate legal entity, okay, for one thing, okay? Second is, if the trust has to pay all those taxes and they get the construction equipment, the residue of the estate distributed to them, I can't see how they're not benefited. And there was more than just the four kids in the trust. There were numerous grandkids. I can't remember now how many there were, but there was approximately 20 beneficiaries under the trust. So, yeah, they would have been benefited just as in it. If it didn't just, on the tax issue, that would not have just benefited Jeannie Weekly. It would have benefited these residual beneficiaries. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Well, what Jeannie Weekly is asking this court, well, one thing, I get less than a minute. I'm going to say this real succinctly, but the Schult case issued in 1990 was after Hafferman was issued in 1989. Schult says no two-prong test. Hafferman says probably a two-prong test, and then Seabrass 3 says two-prong test. Weekly relied upon Uniform Probate Code, benefit to the estate, and Schult that says no two-prong test to come to the reason it did. The lower court erred by not considering all of the evidence we presented at that subsequent hearing. So we're asking that that be remanded so the court can look at all those facts that we presented, as well as a matter of law, this court can mandate the lower court to award interest to Weekly pursuant to the arguments set forth in a brief.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court will be in recess for 10 minutes and then have a rules hearing.